Geekaholics, it's the Bad Tackle Podcast.
Welcome to Synthaholics. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. Today, we are not talking about Star Trek. We are not talking about Star Trek Picard. So we have myself, Aaron O'Brien. We have David Duncan.
Who turned out the lights.
And we have Holly Michelle.
Yay!
Welcome all.
Thank you.
We are talking Doctor Who. So we have never talked about... We have never talked about Doctor Who.
Wait, so we have. The file was corrupted, and we never got to put it out.
You're right. Holly and I, probably a year ago, Holly,
you and I
had a really good fucking conversation.
We had a very good episode. I think we talked about three of the new episodes with, what's her name, Jodie Whittaker?
Jodie Foster.
Yeah, and not Jodie Foster.
Tane Wynn.
We talked about three episodes, and then the file got all messed up, and it was a big mess, and so we just scrapped the whole thing. So, but this time, what's so special about this in my heart, I don't know about you, Holly.
I'm excited. But
Dave has never watched Doctor Who before.
I know!
It's on purpose.
I've seen bits of episodes back when Battlestar Galactica was on TV, and like they'd play a David Tennant episode. I saw one where he was yelling at Satan, and I was like, what?
Oh, yeah.
But I don't remember anything.
Called The Cage, I think.
Yeah, he was in a cave, and he was yelling at Satan the entire time. I was like, oh, okay, that's weird. I'll just play my computer game until Battlestar Galactica starts.
Well, this episode, we are talking about the two-parter, Silence in the Library and The Dead Forest. This is season 4, episode 8 and 9, and obviously this is the 10th Doctor, David Tennant, with his companion Donna. And this
easily the
first,
best Doctor.
He's pretty good. I mean, I think we can get into other Doctors that people like, but... this aired May 31st, 2008. So, a little more than 10 years ago.
12. So,
yeah.
And
it's been a
speaking
while.
Of things that are years old, we're 5 years old.
I cannot believe we're 5 years old.
March 30th was our first episode. March 30th, 2015.
That's crazy. Well, happy birthday to us.
Happy birthday to us. We're slightly older toddler now. Our first website post was February 10th, 2015.
Yes, I do remember doing that. It's so crazy. It's so long ago. Well, happy birthday to us. If you are hearing this, make sure to hit us up on Facebook or on Twitter or wherever else.
Send us a sexy Marilyn Monroe happy birthday song to send them.
Send us a happy birthday song or just a quick happy birthday. That'd be much appreciated. All right. Well, here we go. Let's get into the full episode. Doctor Who, and this is the...
Before we talk about the episode, I just want to know... general thoughts from David.
Oh, okay, yeah, definitely. Without getting into full spoilers.
It was all right.
Spoilers.
The guy who was the therapist, he's best known to me as the guy who gets cut into a whole bunch of cubes in the Resident Evil movie by the lasers. And then David Tennant's best known to me as the Purple Man and Jessica Jones.
And then yes.
And then like
excellent
no one,
character there.
And then like no one else was like super familiar. It was pretty good. Like there was like it was interesting. I liked how there was like a sense of like kind of this weird sense of horror and like what I've always heard is like a weird, cheesy, like weird sci-fi show, but there was like a genuine sense of horror in this. Like, I definitely felt more emotions in these two episodes than I felt in the entire Picard run, which is...
Well, which I mean, just, these are great episodes, but
I mean, I think I just wonder, like, what happened to writers between 2008 and now? Because Battlestar Galactica, like I said, I was waiting for Battlestar Galactica to air, and I saw David Tennant yelling at the devil, or the Satan, or whatever. So, I mean, like, Battlestar Galactica was really good back then, too. So, something's happened, or the collapse of writing.
No, first of all, just be clear. There are Doctor Who episodes that are just complete.
That are not great.
They're not great. I mean, you could spend your whole life not seeing it and be okay.
Sure, sure. But I mean, like, this episode has some really nice moments in it. Like, some, like, really, like, good. I mean, it wasn't, like, horror, but, like, I had a sense of dread just because it's just, like, something innocuous as a shadow is fucking deadly. It's just, like, it's kind of like, ugh. And then it kills you instantaneously, basically. It's just like, I don't know. This was pretty cool. Pretty cool concept. And it was pretty fun.
Yeah, so this is written by Stephen Moffat. And Stephen Moffat has written just a ton of great Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And he is, I would say he probably is the guy who kind of like helps restart the whole Doctor Who franchise back in the day.
2005?
Yeah, back in 2005.
It was either Davies or Moffat. I can't remember.
I don't know who exactly. I'm not
so hard.
But, I mean, he's definitely one of those guys that are like, you know, like, if he's got his name attached to, like, the script or whatever, it's probably pretty good. And I'm not saying every episode he does is great, but a lot of them are pretty good. I know some people have, like, issues with some things that he writes, but I'm like, I don't give a shit. I mean, every time I've seen Stephen Moffat on an episode as a writer, I'm like, this is going to be a good episode.
Yeah, well, he gets you invested. Yeah,
so he's Doctor Who's Ronald D. Moore.
Something like that, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely taken, and he thinks outside the box too. Obviously, this episode is
very outside the box.
Yeah, you wouldn't think of it that way. So, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I mean, just to put out there too. I mean, this is BBC, and now Doctor Who has gotten more in their budget, but at this time, you know, it was getting better. But if you go back to the 70s and the 80s, Doctor Who was very low budget sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And it very cheesy. And, you know, it had gradually gotten better when they redid it, like in 2005, but it's still low budget for a lot of things. So, but they, for what they have, they make really cool stories, so in my opinion.
I agree.
Well, I think that's why the writing was better back before CG became cheaper and easier to do. Like, yeah, you know, especially the original series Star Trek. I mean, they had limited budget too. Granted, it was cutting edge at the time, so they were spending more than Doctor Who probably was on their episodes. But still, like, I mean, like, they were limited by technology, and therefore they had to write around it. Whereas Discovery and Picard are just like, oh, we'll throw technology at it. Who cares right. how good the writing is?
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, and it's we can get into more of it later, but yeah, these are fun episodes, so I'm happy to talk about these, and I'm very excited actually to talk about these two episodes. So let's get into it. The very beginning of Silence in the Library, we have a little girl, and she's like with a therapist, and the therapist's name is Dr. Moon.
Cube Man.
And he says, you know, close your eyes and what do you see? And she goes, I see a library. And she's like walking kind of like through the air of this like almost larger than life library, like a city. And when he opens her eyes, she's in a room, like her house with her father, with a therapist. And then when she closes her eyes again, she's in another part of the library, and she kind of floats down and she's in this like, you know, very traditional looking library when there's some banging on the door. And suddenly who jumps through is the doctor and Donna Noble, his companion. And they lock the door, you know, in a frenzy. And then they turn around and the doctor sees the girl and says, oh, hello there. And then all of a sudden she opens up her eyes and, you know, we get the intro to the show. So that's the intro right there. So very much get you intrigued. Like, what is this about? How does this work? You know, a little girl, it's in her head. There's a library and the doctor's in her head. So that's weird. So the TARDIS shows up, and this is the 51st century, and it's a planet size library called the Library, and it holds every book that's ever been written and by one of the most powerful computers ever made. So its actual core of the planet is a computer.
A mainframe.
Yeah, it's a mainframe computer processing. So they show up and they're kind of taking in all the awe of the whole library and the books, and then the doctor realizes there's nobody here. Where is everybody? And then he goes
and
to
this is where he
people
says that
don't
great
like
line
reading in the future. We listen to audiobooks.
I doubt that.
What did you say, Holly? This is where he said what?
This is the part where he says that death gives us size. You know, they're talking about he's like, oh, we're in biographies, and she's like, oh, you would bring us to biographies. There's always a death at the end.
Yeah.
Yes, and he's like, and that was like such foreshadowing for this
for sure.
Two part episode. There's actually a lot in this episode.
There's a lot. There's a lot that goes on. And he goes, well, what happened to all the people? And he goes to one of the computers, and they said that there's over a million life forms. He's like, if there's a million life forms, where is everybody? Mm-hmm. And then he shows Don asks, like, well, why did we come here? And his doctor admits, it's not, I didn't just take us there for no reason. And he shows that he has this psychic paper, and it shows up periodically through every episode. And it's a message that's saying to come, you know, need your help, come to the library.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what, and then it's sealed with a kiss. And Dad was like, what's that about? And he goes, I don't know. So
people think I'm cute.
Was it a kiss or was it a heart? I think it was a heart.
Yeah, I think it was a little X, like a little, little X kiss.
It was drawn boobies.
And then, yeah. So then they go to it's a node. It's like a information center. It has a human face and tells them that to get out of the library. So,
well, I mean, at first it basically tells them that
it's a weird candle looking thing.
Well, it doesn't tell him to get out of the library. It plays back messages from someone who left a message in the interface.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, that's when they notice that it says stay out of the light, or stay out of the shadows.
Count the shadows.
Shadows. And then that's when the spooks
the
doctor.
Who turned off the lights?
Like, yeah, that's when...
not there yet, David.
It spooks the doctor, and the doctor's like... Wait, is this what I think it is? I wonder if he already knows what's going on here. So this is when they're in like inside the library, and all of a sudden the lights start going down, like going off in the library, and they have to run. And they start running, and they're trying to get through a door, and the sonic screwdriver won't open the door.
What? It doesn't do wood.
It doesn't do wood, Donna yells at him.
We need the other sonic screwdriver, the one that actually works on wood.
So
they do install a wood setting later on. It's yeah, it happens.
So he does get through the door, and then they brace the door closed, and this is where we first came in with Donna and the doctor rushing through the door, and they say, turn around, go, oh, hello there, and there is a spherical security camera in the air that sees it, and once he says hello there, it just kind of like shuts itself down and crashes on the floor. So then the doctor's using his sonic screwdriver to see what's wrong with it, and then we're back into the girl's living room, and she's screaming, "Oh, make it stop! Ah, make it stop!" And he's saying he sees that on the
sonicking it.
He's sonicking it, and sees it on the thing, like written out, like, you know. No, please stop, or something like that. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. Am I hurting you? That's the one thing I love about the doctor. The doctor is actually so gentle with people, even with things right. Like a security cam. He's like, oh, I didn't mean to hurt you.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm, not my intention. And then it says, others are coming. So, and he's like, what does that mean? And this is when we get the whole thing about the library's been breached. Mm-hmm. So that's where he's like, okay, what's going on? And I think the doctor sort of knows what's happening at this point. Like, I mean, maybe not totally for sure, but I think he has an inkling.
Right. I feel like that's partially right. I mean, there isn't one moment in here that, like, he's like, it's definitive that, oh, he just figured it out. Yeah. So it's like, at what moment did he figure it out? Did he figure it out when he got the chicken leg? Or did he kind of know already?
Yeah.
Actually, I think this is before the chicken leg. But anyway,
He has an idea that...
Just to introduce it to them. So yeah, I think he knew.
Yeah, I think he was getting an idea of what was going on with the shadows and stuff like that. So this is the Vashta Narada. These are like shadow creatures. They hunt in packs and they just eat people to the bone. Like, there's nothing.
But he hasn't figured out yet. Like, he hasn't said it yet.
Right, he hasn't brought that up yet. But this is when we get the others coming in. This is an exploratory team, and they are led by Professor River Song. And this is the first time we see her.
Yes.
And Dave, if you don't know, River Song has a very long storyline throughout the rest of Doctor Who for quite a bit. And she
comes after David Tennant?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And I love her character. I think she might be one of my favorite characters outside of the Doctor.
She's a great character.
Oh my God, I love her. So she's awesome. And I love how she interacts with the Doctor as well. So it's always fun. So yeah. The cool thing is, well, we'll get into that, but she's an archaeologist and she's with this team and she's with this guy Mr. Lux. And this is the family had built the library. His family, Dr. Lux's family, built a library and he wants to, it's been sealed for 100 years and they're here to kind of like see what's going on with the library and see if they can get the library up and running again. Mm-hmm. But then when they run into each other, there's like some mistrust and everything, but Professor Song knows the Doctor, and the Doctor doesn't know who Professor Song is.
Right.
And what we don't know right away, but we'll find out soon, is that the Doctor and Professor Song's interactions are out of time.
Out of order.
So the Doctor, because he travels through time and space, he doesn't have a regular linear time that everyone else does. So he jumps here, he jumps there, and his time is all over the place. So she's met him before, but he's never met her. So that's really interesting. So so from there, the Doctor starts trying to figure out what's going on, but he knows that the Vashta Narada is on there, is in the library, and that they're, like I said, they're, you know, they eat organic, like, tissue, and they seem to leave the bones behind. And he shows that by taking a lunch and taking a chicken wing and throwing into the shadows.
After Miss Evangeline has been dead, though.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Or Miss Evangeline. Mm-hmm. One of the other things
Mirror-faced lady.
So next thing that they find out is they're trying to access the computer systems and seeing what's going on with the whole library, because like you said, there's been this like millions and millions of life forms, but there's nobody there. And Mr. Lux, the owner of the library, a family owner of the library, isn't really saying what happened with the library, so nobody knows. And they try to access the computers when we go back to the little girl and the phone's ringing in her house, and her father doesn't like hear it for some reason. And so when she goes to pick up the phone, it doesn't seem like it hangs up or something, like the call didn't go through.
It stops ringing or something. Yeah.
And then the Doctor then goes and tries a different thing and hacks into the computer. And then the Doctor is actually on her television. And that she was watching some cartoons, and the Doctor is seeing the girl, and they're like, "Who are you?" and stuff like that. So, that's some interesting thing that we don't know what's going on. And then
don't quite understand yet.
The girl starts playing with the television remote, and that's when books start flying off the air. That I thought that was a little weird. I didn't understand how books would fly through the air. But
yeah.
And it doesn't tie in up at all. It was just kind of weird.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. Then
I think it just got everyone moving around enough to where they accidentally went into the shadows.
Right, exactly. And then they see the word Cal on the library screen. It's like, what's Cal? So like that's that we'll see that again and again. C-A-L. So we'll see that over and over again.
Right, and Dr. fucking Lux knew the whole time, but he wasn't saying.
Right. Right, he's not going to say. And the doctor basically saying that his team's in danger and they need to listen to everything he says. At this time, like Holly said, this one younger girl, pretty girl, who everyone thinks is stupid, Mrs. Evangelista, a door opens because the girl in her living room pressed a button and a door opened. And Mrs. Evangelista goes through that and she kind of wanders off from the group, and this is where the Vashti Narada just, you know, we don't see it on screen, but she's completely just turned to bones within her spacesuit. And
not just within it, they even shred the suit.
Yeah, the suit's pretty shredded too. And when the doctor and the rest of the crew all catch up because they hear her scream, they see that they have these little communication devices, and it's called data ghosting, which it has a person's consciousness, and they have this brief conversation, especially with Donna, because Donna was talked to her and was kind to her before, and is talking to her, and then you know they're having this conversation, and this is where
her data stop, like the data ghosting stops, and she starts to loop.
Yeah, she starts to loop, and she's saying ice cream over and over again. So, and then it just kind of dies. So, but this will play into later on, but it's definitely very interesting. You know, it's an interesting concept as well. So then we're back in.
That's when we're introduced to the actual. He's like, "I'll introduce you."
Right,
and then it's when
he throws the chicken leg into the shadows.
Yeah. And
chicken leg is, you know, a regular drumstick, and then it's completely stripped down to the bone immediately. Right. And then he turns around and he's like, "Everyone, you have to stay out of the shadows. If you have an extra shadow attached to you, tell us immediately." And this is when Proper Dave is he has an extra shadow, so. Real quick, Dr. Moon is in the child's living room, and he says, "Can I talk to her alone for a minute?" And he goes to her, and he says, "Just so you know, everything you see here is a dream. What you see when you close your eyes, the library, that's reality." And it kind of freaks her out, so.
She, like, shuts him down.
Yeah.
Turns off signal or whatever, and he, like, disappears.
Yeah. But it was pretty interesting that
he divulged that information.
He says that information, and like the look on her face is like pure horror. Like what? Mm-hmm. Back in the library, they decided, like I said, Proper Dave has got got an extra shadow on him, and they decide that everyone should put their helmets back on. Maybe that will keep the Vashti Narada out of their suits. And when they do that, unfortunately, Proper Dave doesn't live for too long. And Proper Dave gets eaten alive within his suit. And
before that, Doctor tries to get rid of Donna.
Oh, right. That's right. Forgot.
He tries to put Donna back on the ship.
Yeah, he wants to put Donna onto a there's like a transporter system in the gift shop, and she's gonna take her and put her into the TARDIS because she doesn't have a spacesuit,
right, to protect her. Yeah. And this is one of my favorite moments between him and Donna, and it's so stupid, but it's great. When he's like, "Let me explain," and then he just like whizzes her off.
And just beams her over. But
Donna, let me explain.
But it doesn't work the way he expects, because Donna just screams. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what happens to her right away.
Yeah.
So we're like, what happened to Donna? Because you see her almost like materializing in the TARDIS. But then all of a sudden she disappears while screaming. So we're like, what's that about?
Yeah.
So, so Proper Dave, like I said, it's got the been stripped to a skeleton, and he starts chasing everybody. So this is the Vashtarada, and they have the ghost.
Where's your line, Dave?
Yeah, Dave. Where's your line for, hey, who turned off the lights?
Hey, who turned off the lights? I can't see.
And the corpse of Proper Dave in his spacesuit starts chasing the crew like a Scooby-Doo.
Hey, who turned off the lights?
And when I saw this, I was just like, this is the best television I've seen in a long time. When this came on the first time I saw this, I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. So
it's awesome and kind of horrifying. It's just like his last words, just like chasing you as he's trying to kill you.
Right. Turn out the lights.
They're all running away from the suit. The lights are all going off, and they're having problems even like getting away from it because they're trying to get away from Proper Dave chasing them. And
good thing I've been Proper Dave.
Yeah, that's right. Can we start calling you Proper Dave?
No, Improper Dave.
Oh, Improper
Dave. Improper Dave.
Yeah. So the other thing is that one of the nodes turn around, and while they're running, these computer nodes that have the human face, and then we turn around and see it's Donna's face on it. And it's saying, you know, Donna Noble has left the library. Donna Noble has been saved. And
we didn't talk about, so there's
a note saying like 4,000 people have been
4,022 saved, no survivors. That was something that wasn't brought up yet.
Right. Yeah.
That was in one of the database correct that they figured out, and they were like, what the hell does this mean, saved, if there were no survivors? And then it was the whole Donna Noble has left the library. Donna Noble has been saved.
Yeah.
That like was creepy. Also kind of horrifying.
Yeah, seeing her face on that weird pedestal thing.
It's like a candle, except it's like a cushioned candle. It's weird.
Yeah, isn't it weird? And they're all being chased by the Vashtarada, and episode ends.
Improper Dave. Yeah, so we jump into the next episode, and this is Forest of the Dead. And this is where River Song uses her sonic blaster and cuts a hole in the wall, and they all can escape from the Vashtarada and Proper Dave. It's chasing them down the corridors. And the girl is back in her living room, and she is watching this all on TV. And then all of a sudden she switches the channel, and we get Donna being taken out of an ambulance on her TV. Mm-hmm. And then it's like a weird, like kind of like a soap opera, like editing, where all of a sudden she's in a hospital, and we see Dr. Moon there, and he's kind of telling her like, I don't remember how I got here, Donna's saying, and Dr. Moon says, don't you remember you were injured and you had these injuries so you can't remember? And they're trying to treat her, and then she says, Dr. Moon tells her that she's been there for years, and you know, they have this whole thing where all of a sudden she meets one of, like, I guess he's like a maintenance man in the hospital that she works or she's staying in. And well,
so this is kind of, you should probably go through the progression of time so real quick. So like, he meets her, and he's like, she's like, I don't remember getting here. And he's like, you had an accident. And then she fills in the sentence, and he's like, oh, I can't believe I forgot that. And he's like, but then you remembered. Right. And then they were out walking, and she's like, how did we get outside? And he was like, we came down the stairs. We passed so-and-so. Then she finishes the sentence, and she's like, oh, how did I forget that? And he's like, well, you remembered.
Right.
And then he's like, let's go fishing. And then all of a sudden they're at the water. So I just thought we should point that.
Yeah, out. And that's and there and it's a weird editing because it jumps to different scenes, but it's obviously making a progression that first she's in the hospital, then she's getting treated by Dr. Moon, and then she's getting slowly better. She's walking around and she meets this guy named Lee who has a stammer. He takes some fishing, and then all of a sudden they're married and they have two kids. Mm-hmm. So like we're jumping on these like quick stories and we're like, what is that all about? And then from there she's contacted by this like Victorian dressed woman in like a dark veil.
She hasn't been contacted yet, has she? I don't think she's been contacted yet.
Yeah, well she gets something that gets like a message, right? Saying like a note.
She sees her outside, but it's she sees her after she has the conversation with Dr. Moon. Like, so she's having a conversation with Dr. Moon. He's over for tea or something, and he's replaced by an image of the doctor.
Yeah, real quick. All of a sudden, the doctor phases in.
Yeah, and he's like, and she's like, why do I remember this? And then he's like, but then you forgot. And then she forgot that she remembered the doctor.
Right.
Exactly. So, like, he, like, put a stop to her memory on it. And that's when we start to see the black figure.
Right.
I think.
And, yeah, right around that point, and like you said, you know, after that happens, she first leaves a note, like, meet me at this park. And Donna decides to meet her at this park when she takes her kids. And she starts talking to this person that's veiled. And they says you should look at all the kids out there. And Donna's still kind of like doesn't want to like
believe that it's fake.
Believe that anything's fake because she's saying that this is all not real. And then we find out this is Miss Evangelista, but she had been completely warped by the events that happened to her. So she looks like. Like she like a funhouse mirror. It done something weird to her face.
Mm-hmm.
And when he tells Donna to look at all the children playing, she sees that all the children in the playground are identical. And she hadn't seen it. So all of a sudden, she's kind of freaked out by that, obviously. So, and this when this happens, the little girl's in her living room. All of a sudden, she gets starts getting upset and. Her father and Dr. Moon are there, but then she makes them all disappear with their TV remote, and the library starts going crazy and inside, so it's set to explode or to melt down or something like that. So, and then we're back into the library with the doctor and crew and Professor Riversong, and they're. Like you said, they're still on run from the Vashta Narada, and they're still trying to, I guess, figure out what happened to all the people, but also at the same time survive. And at the same time, while they're trying to figure all this out, one of the other people on there, I think her name was Anita, and I think she's the pilot. I'm not entirely sure of their crew.
I don't remember her. I don't remember the roles.
Yeah, but she was all of a sudden, she has two shadows. And this is where they're like, they put her helmet on and they're trying to be like, okay, let's just stay calm and maybe we can figure out what's going on here. So
the doctor tints her visor so that to hopefully keep the Vashta Narada from thinking that they can still eat her because he wants them to think that she's already gone.
Right.
Well, that they are already in there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and at this point, you know, Anita's still fine, and she's with the group, this is when Proper Dave catches up with them again, while everyone's running away from Proper Dave as usual, and the doctor tries to talk to the Vashta Narada using the communicator that they have, so. Trying to get them to talk. And we find out that other Dave, unfortunately, had died by the Vashta Narada as well. So we didn't see him get devoured, but all of a sudden, off screen, somehow he got taken down because the doctor's faced with two
of them.
two of them in their suits, their space suits, with the Vash Narada inside.
Who turned out the lights?
Right. And it tells them some interesting things that that these are forests. And he's like, what are you talking about? You know, that's weird. And they do learn to communicate through their the communicators
the
that they have.
Ghost. Yeah, through the ghost.
And when he starts talking to them, he was like, he realizes their books, because they're surrounded by books, that they were the Vash Narada spawned from microspores. They're inside mm-hmm. trees. Mm-hmm. So, and when that happened, some of these books must have taken those trees down, and those microspores were still in the books, are still in the paper that made from the trees. And yeah.
And this was set up in one of the first sentences of the episode about the books being all brand new editions, and they're all specially printed specifically for the library.
Yes, exactly. So this is where the doctor figures out how the Vash Narada got onto this planet and basically are in such huge, you know, like there's so many of them mm-hmm. because there's millions and millions of them, because there's all these books, and if any of those spores survived, obviously it would they would be born. So so from there, the two Vash Naradas are going to try to take out the doctor. The doctor opens a trap door hatch on the floor, and we see him kind of like escaping, like on some like trestle or something like that, climbing on it or something like that. So
yeah.
Then we're going back to Professor Song, and she's talking to Anita and talking about the doctor, how she knows the doctor, and she says she's seen whole armies turn and run away from him in the future. So, and that he can open the TARDIS by a snap of his finger. And the doctor goes, it's not how it works. It doesn't work like that.
Spoilers.
And he's like, it will. Don't worry.
No one can open the TARDIS by the snap of their fingers. And she's like, the doctor can.
Right.
I think it's important to mention, too, that all throughout these two episodes, they're trying to understand each other, you know? And he is trying to understand why this person knows so much about him that he doesn't know, and that mm-hmm. it's so foreign to him. And she's trying to cope with the fact that this is the first time they ever met. And it's hard to look at a man that she loves and that she's really grown to, well, we don't know that she loves him, but, you know, this person that she's grown to be very close with looks at her like he has no idea who she is. That's pretty tough.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then at some point, they're having this argument about if, like, the doctor doesn't feel like he should trust her and stuff like that. And she has a sonic screwdriver that, just like the doctor, but it's a little more advanced. And the doctor says, you know, where'd you get a sonic screwdriver? He says, you gave it to me. And he doesn't believe her. And then she, during this argument, she comes up and whispers something in his ear. And it's like has a sobering effect on the doctor. And we don't know until a little bit later, but she whispers the doctor's real name in his ear, which he never tells anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, at some point, the doctor feels
that wait. The doctor's Narek?
Yeah, Narek. Yeah.
No, because he tells his true name to the person he loves.
Yeah, yeah, it's a Romulan thing. The doctor is a Romulan. No, but I love that too, because it's like she has all this information, and like, you know, and we didn't mention it before, but she's got her diary, which we'll see show up again in the future, where they mm-hmm. talk about like what they've done together and what they haven't done. So that's always fun. So that's a
cowgirl, reverse cowgirl, Eiffel Tower.
Yeah. So I don't know, maybe that's in there. We haven't really gotten that far into it, but so anyways, they're still trying to figure out the 4,022 saved message, what that meant. And then they realize that saved means that they have been saved to the library's computer. And this is where they have to go to the core of the planet, the computer. And as we know, the girl is freaking out, and somehow that triggered the planet's meltdown. Or the hard drive.
Yeah, because she deactivated the moon.
The moon. Dr. Moon.
The Moon was what, a antivirus?
Yeah, basically kind of like kept things in check and stuff like that in like a security system. Yeah, I was supposed to watch over, but I guess basically having all the 4,000 people downloaded into her hard drive was it's too much for her, and she's becoming overloaded because of all that. So that's why this self-destruct thing on the planet. And the doctor realized these saved people are in the library, and he can pull them up from its memory. So they're going to go down to the planet's core and try to retrieve all that and to regenerate all those people. And so from there, they're heading down, obviously, with all the problems of getting down there and avoiding the Vashnarada. And this is when the Vashnarada finally kills Anita. And it's pretty cool.
But it's subtle.
It is at the moment, because you don't realize it. And then Doctor takes the shadow or the tint out of her visor, and we see it's just obviously another skeleton within the spacesuit. And the Doctor's pissed off. He goes, "I really liked Anita, you know, and she shouldn't have killed her," and stuff like that. And this is he has like a really like intense conversation with the Vashnarada, saying basically, you know, don't mess with me, because you know, I'm the Doctor, and if you know anything about the library, you should look me up, see what I'm about. And somehow they must have Vashnarada read, I guess.
Well, it's also a database, and they are communicating through the tech in the collars. So
yeah, maybe they read too. I don't. Maybe they can access the database somehow. We don't know what the true form of the Vashnarada are, other than just being shadows,
little dust particles.
Midichlorians.
Blood. And this is when they back off, and they give them 24 hours,
one day. Save all the people from the hard drive and get them off of the planet and leave them in peace.
Right. So this, now that they have their armistice, or you know, that they can, they're not going to fight each other, they can kind of work a little faster. And this is when Doctor is saying he's going to get into the hard drive and stop the meltdown and get all the people out, but he's going to do that he's going to jack into the computer basically and use his brain somehow to do this. I wasn't clear exactly how that was supposed to work, but it's somehow, because he's a Time Lord, he can take that, he was saying. But River Song is like,
he was just saying that though.
Yeah, River Song was like, "No, you can't do this. You know, it'll kill you." And so,
why does it matter? The Doctor can just regenerate.
Can be killed.
He can die.
He can be killed, but he's obviously much stronger than an average human, and he can regenerate if he's damaged. But it doesn't mean he's not immortal. Like, nothing can kill him.
Well, I thought that was the whole regeneration work. You died and you regenerated to something else.
No, you have to still be alive.
Just like, I'm almost dead. I'm not quite dead yet.
A severe injury triggers the regeneration process. Right. But if you go too far, you will die.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this is where River Song basically knocks out the Doctor.
Knocks him out.
And then handcuffs him to a piece of machinery.
BDSM.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Adding things to the book.
Yeah. And Professor Song hooks herself up to the machine to basically fix the computer. And I don't know, however that's supposed to work. That's not very clear to me whatsoever. The Doctor then has to watch as, she gets herself basically killed from all that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we get Donna basically seeing her world kind of get real screwy. Like, it looks like the end of the world like the sky's red and stuff like that, and she brings the kids into her room, and the kids disappear on her. So, and she's freaked out by that, obviously, and then she runs downstairs, and her husband's there, and they're like, you know, I don't know what's real anymore, and she's upset, obviously, and then he kind of like flies away into the distance. So, and this is like, you know, the last time, and she's like, I'll find you, I'll look for you, whatever, you know, but we know that's not going to work out. Anyways, from there, the doctor starts, they start figuring out about getting all the people to somehow regenerate from the transporter into, you know, from the computer's memory bank. So it's
like
basically
reanimate.
Yes, like they were stuck in the buffering pad, like we saw in Scotty's
poor Franklin
generation in the episode Relics for Next Generation. So this is the same idea. They were kind of like stuck in the buffering pad on this computer. So 4,000 people are all brought back, and Donna as well. So and this is where Donna and him are kind of like sadly moping around, because Donna can't find her husband Lee, and obviously the doctor's upset that Professor Song died, and he takes her diary and just leaves it there, and she's like, aren't you interested?
With the screwdriver.
Yeah, with the screwdriver. It's like, and Donna's like, don't you want to read that? And goes, yeah, you don't want to know what your future's about, you know, it's not a good thing. And this is all of a sudden they started like, you kind of think it's the end of the episode, and then the doctor's all of a sudden comes back and goes, oh my god, and he realizes that inside the sonic screwdriver is that a neural relay, and her data ghost is still there, her consciousness is still there. So he decides, he runs back to the core, and he's going to upload it into the computer. And then we see that Professor Riversong's data is put into the computer, and it now is living in this virtual reality with the little girl and Dr. Moon and the rest of the crew that was lost during the killings of the Vash Narada. Mm. And they're all together. And
Evangeline's face is normal again.
I hope you didn't hate your coworkers.
Yeah, I know, right?
I so put you in hell.
Well, they were all kind of dicks to Evangeline, so...
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we get this kind of end for her, which is our first introduction to Professor Song, but this is technically her end?
This is her death?
Yeah.
Her end and her beginning.
Yeah, exactly. And just
although
when,
I'm... Never mind.
And then we get this... the doctor snaps his finger for the TARDIS, and it opens.
And just he's like, so happy about that. So proud of himself.
And then we see River. She's in a kid's bedroom in Donna's house, and she has the little girl who controls the library. Ow. And the other two little kids. So, and then she says, sweet dreams, and turns off the lights, and that's the end of the episode. That era, two episodes. You've never seen Doctor Who before. I mean, not on a full episodes like these. What did you think?
It was pretty good. I mean, definitely the early mid 2000s are better writing in general than some new stuff is pretty good. I've been enjoying Ozark a lot. I don't know. It was pretty good. Like I said, like the weird deaths and just people being gone instantaneously was kind of horrifying. Just them being gone and like their little memories fading out and dying real fast and everything it was kind of interesting the way they took it. I don't know. I love Dr. Tennant. I mean, I love David Tennant. He's a really good actor, and so just mm-hmm. just seeing him in the role where he's like so like whimsical and like. Completely different from the Purple Man is kind of cool.
Yeah,
because the Purple Man is like what I mostly know him from, because I haven't really seen him in anything. He should be in more things. He's a magnificent actor. It was pretty good. I was, you know, I definitely felt sad when like Donna Noble died, or like looked like she died, and she got turned into the stupid looking candle thing with a face on it. And I was like, oh, that's awful. You know, I felt sad. I felt more sad in two episodes of this show than I did the entire run of Picard. I was just aw. I just felt sad. And I was like, oh, I'm feeling emotions as I'm watching a television show. When does this happen?
Right.
I don't know. It was pretty good. How about you guys?
Holly, why don't you go?
Well, you guys know I love these episodes.
Oh, yeah.
I just love the way that Doctor Who pulls at your attention span. It makes you really think. The way it builds these characters, you know, throughout the entire episode, Evangeline has her own story. And, you know, proper Dave or other Dave has his own little, like, story. And, you know, Donna's got her own story. And the Doctor has his and Riversong has hers. And so it's like, it's, I don't know. There's a lot going on. And it's actually funny. Your retelling makes it sound so casual.
I know, it's not casual. Because it's like, whatsoever.
Let's get through it. It's really not.
Yeah, it's very fast paced and it jumps around. You're like, oh, what's that? Who's this? Yeah. What's going on here? Yeah, because it does. And honestly, sometimes rewatching it a second time actually helps because you pick up on things that you didn't pick up on the first time.
So. Well, there's always these little things. And like I said, the very beginning of the episode, it really sets you up to death, you know, that this was an episode about death. And you know, the data storage, that's little things throughout the whole episode. And, you know, to introduce a character and kill her.
Yeah. Stunning. It's such a great character too.
Yeah. And like to make you care about a character so quickly in two episodes is just phenomenal. I just think it's great. Yeah. And, you know, I absolutely, Donna Noble's probably my favorite companion. Okay. So I don't know. There's a lot that I love about it that I could talk about forever, but.
Inaro Serra is my favorite companion.
Which one is it?
The one from Serenity.
Oh, right.
Inara.
Okay. Inara. I was like, who's Nara? Like, Inara. Okay. So yeah, I mean, I like this episode a lot. It's a really good episode. You know, people talk about Silence in the Library all the time, mainly because of River Song. But yeah, like I said, I can't say too much about it because I will just talk about it.
I love this for so many reasons. One, because it's so outside the box. I mean, the little girl and Dr. Moon, that whole thing feels at first like, what does this have to do with a library? Like, you can't even like. When you first start watching this, you're like, how do these even connect? And it's so wonderful how they make this all work together. And how they do the Donna Noble, like, it's when she's stuck in the computer and she has, like, her own little TV show going on. You know, it's like so well done. It's somewhat cheesy, but it's still well done. Like, they figure out how to do it tastefully, but also make it entertaining. And also, they rush it, but they make it seem normal at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting. And obviously, the Doctor, you know, David Tennant's so fun to watch. The only thing I don't like about David Tennant, and it's not just him; it's a lot of other his rushed speaking with his British accent. Sometimes I miss things that he say, and I have to like go back and listen to it again because I cannot. Sometimes figure out what he's saying for every little time, not all the time, but sometimes like, I and he kind of like mumbles a little bit as well. Like,
well, he's a Scot. And so his accent, he's doing a British accent as a Scotsman.
As a Scotsman.
So,
yeah, but it's difficult sometimes. So that's probably one of the things I don't like about David Tennant. I love David Tennant, don't get me wrong. But that's like, I get like, oh, I didn't understand what he said there. I have to kind of like stop and kind of go back and listen to it again. Because it's too fast and how he delivers his lines. And I know other doctors do the same thing too. It's not just him. It's kind of like,
say,
it's kind of how the doctor's written.
it's maybe it is kind of how he's written. He's, you know, actually he says something about it in this episode, you know, when they discover that Cal is the mind of a child plugged into a computer. He's like, it's having a million, you know, having so many voices stuck in your head, it's like, it's enough to drive one crazy. It's luck being me. And so, like, yeah, he's got all this shit going on in his head, so they speak fast because they have a lot to do. But I don't ever remember having that thought about David Tennant, but I do have it about Eccleston from time to time. Sometimes he's too fast for me, and I'm like, what?
Who was the guy before David Tennant?
Eccleston.
Eccleston. That was Eccleston? Because a long time ago, Holly and Robbie asked me to do Doctor Who on Nerdynomicon, and back in the day it was on Netflix. I think I did watch a couple episodes. Only vaguely remember a face membrane spread between like two poles and like water being spritzed on it.
Yes, yes.
And I was like, this is weird. And I remember seeing him. He just wasn't very captivating. I remember seeing David Tennant as the guy yelling at Satan, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I was watching the couple episodes of this, and I just fell off it real quick because it was like, I didn't like Eccleston.
Yeah. Some people don't like him, and some people love him tremendously. So
he looks like generic bad guy villain in a show, not like a, he doesn't look like a lead. That's my same problem with, what's his face? Is James Bond, Daniel Craig. He looks like generic villain guy instead of like leading man, good guy.
Well, they kind of write a point about that in later on in the show that you kind of discover.
And Eccleston was cast in Thor: Dark World, where he plays one of the Dark Elves.
Mm-hmm.
He's the leader of the Dark Elves that fights against. Yeah, yeah.
And also, Daniel Craig was like, he was like a generic bad guy in the Tomb Raider movies. I don't think he didn't have a name, or he was like a sub bad guy. He wasn't even like a big bad guy. He was just kind of like one of the henchmen.
He was Destro in G.I. Joe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was? Oh, I barely remember that movie. I know it existed, and I saw it, and I forgot it immediately.
In fact, a lot of the characters in Doctor Who, especially the 80s and 70s, were recast into things like Imperial soldiers in the Star Wars movies. So if you watch some of the older Doctor Who, you'll spot different the generals and captains from the Imperial forces on there. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah, they cast a lot of Brits as the Imperial people.
Yeah, because you know the British are always trying to take over America with a monarchy. anyways, this episode, I mean, I thought there's a few episodes that I think are great for introduction to people, and this is one of them. Mm-hmm. I think these are wonderful, these two episodes, and they kind of get the feel of Doctor Who. It's weird. It's unusual. Doctor Who is not
touching. It's deep.
Yeah. Doctor Who is not conventional. He or she does things in his own weird way, and does not normally use violence to get results. Sometimes they do, but not often. And you barely will ever see the Doctor use a weapon. Once in a while he will, but very, very rarely. And it's usually not to kill anybody. It's usually to do some damage so he can get out of a situation or fix a situation. So that's the other reason I love the Doctor too, and we see this as well. And obviously there's not much they could have done against the Vashti Narada anyways to stop them, at least not
microorganisms. Like, what do you do against that?
I'm sure the Doctor could have figured something out if he really wanted to.
Couldn't he have done something with the atmosphere that would have neutralized them?
Yeah, I'm sure he could have figured something out. I mean, the Doctor is smart enough to do that kind of stuff. But I like that he, you know, obviously realized that, you know, these were, the library was their forest. So, and like I said, Professor Riversong is one of my favorite characters of all Doctor Who. She's just so much fun. And I love how they interact every time. It's great. So,
It's always slightly different because it's always a slightly different situation and point in time.
Right. And she's probably just as crazy as the doctor. So yeah. She does all these crazy things. In fact, a lot of times she's breaking herself out of prison because she's done something to get herself thrown in prison. So that's always fun, too. Yeah, I love these two episodes. I love Doctor Who. I'm glad we were just talking about it. We wanted to get away from Star Trek for an episode because, you know, we've been doing a lot of Picard lately. So.
We did a giant lead up to Picard. We did a lot of Picard talking about Picard. And it's nice to have a palate cleanser every now and then just to flex our other muscles of things that we know or don't know about.
I have my pinky muscle that works.
No, I gotta lift that, lift it up when you're drinking out of your coffee.
My tea.
Oh, your tea.
Flashing your tea, Governor.
Who turned out the lights?
Hey, who turned out the lights?
Michael Caine turned out the lights.
Michael Caine. I don't know, Holly's gonna hate her life now. Caine. Anything else we want to talk about, Doctor Who, before we wrap this up?
I'm glad that we finally did this and had David watch Doctor Who.
I am so happy David watched Doctor Who. I know, Dave, I know this is probably not high-end production.
FX.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I mean, like, the only part that was really jarring was, like, the bad green screen at the beginning. And after that, it wasn't very bad at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple points where you're like, okay, that's obviously green screen or
that's obviously a school skeleton in a suit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They didn't even like add texture or dirt or bits of meat left over. It was just like,
yeah, I know. Just
pristine
clean
school plastic skeleton. Yeah. I mean, like it didn't really bother me that from a story standpoint, like the only things that like didn't make a lot of sense was like the books flying off for no reason when you're pressing the buttons. I'm like, you're pressing buttons, you can control the library, but the books aren't like mechanical.
We got to remember too, though, that is in her head, and she is the library.
I know. I mean, she is the computer of the library, and I understand that. But I mean, also like the books flying off is a very real physical place, and it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying, yeah.
The only thing that pissed me off was that ending, how Professor Song dies. Like, I didn't understand what that accomplished by, hotwiring the computer.
That didn't make any sense either. And, like, you know, the doctor should have been able to regenerate out of that or whatever. I don't know.
No. Maybe it was explained. Maybe it wasn't.
Or maybe it'd be just a flesh wound.
It was just a flesh wound. It was a lot of damage to sustain. Like, I don't think that would have.
Holly, isn't...
You can't come back from that. What?
Isn't Professor Song, doesn't she have, like, part of, like, a Time Lord DNA or something like that? I'm trying to remember, because I don't want to, like, reveal too much to Dave if he ever watches On More, but...
Right.
She's got a twisted
history. As far as for revealing stuff, I have been watching, like, new takes on, like... I watch The Critical Drinker and Doomcock and Midnight's Edge, and everyone's been like, they've been hating on Doctor Who as much as they've been hating on everything else. And I've seen the stuff that they're saying, and I don't have any stake in Doctor Who, so I don't know how bad what they're saying is. I mean, sometimes I agree with what they say about Star Trek and agree with what they say about Star Wars, but I mean, I don't agree with them completely. I mean, they make some good points, and sometimes they're just completely ridiculous. I don't know anything. I don't know enough about Doctor Who to make a judgment call on how bad or not bad they quote unquote ruined the show recently.
Yeah, but those guys are they shit on everything, so I don't even really worry about it. What were you going to say about River Song?
I can't say too much if David ever wants to watch anymore, but she... I can't really answer your question with Dave.
I'm pretty sure she's got some of that going in with her, right? So she's... That's
not why any, I was wondering... Not at this point, no.
Okay, all right. Understood. I can't remember because there's so many episodes. And
I say Let's Kill Hitler, does that remind you?
I love that episode.
So that episode should answer your question.
All right, I'm going to rewatch that one. I'm going to have to rewatch Let's Kill Hitler. So, yeah. Cool. Well, let's leave it there, guys. Let's Kill Hitler. That's good enough. guys, we will get back into Trek next week, and we're going to have some fun with that. So stay tuned. We are, as always, you can find us at synthaholics.com. You can join our Facebook group at Facebook / groups / synthaholics. Join us there and wish us happy birthday if you remember. That'd be great. You could also tweet at us at Synthaholic Duo. That'd be much appreciated. If there's anything you want to say about Doctor Who or these two episodes, or correct us at something maybe we messed up. Maybe there is a reason why they had to jack into the hard, the mainframe of the library computer and save, and you know, sacrifice themselves and save everyone. So, secondly, fifthly, or whatever, if you find this find our show something of value, please go to our Patreon, Patreon/Synthaholics, and you can help donate to the show there and help us out. Continue to bring you a podcast. We are talking about doing some new content in the future. I don't want to give away too much, but we are thinking about different ways to entertain you. So hopefully that works out. And as always, it's great to help out the show by just sharing the show with your friends or talking with your friends about the show. That's a free way to do it, and it doesn't cost anything to share on social media or just tell somebody in passing about the show. We appreciate that as well. Dave, I am so happy we talked to this Doctor Who episode with you.
Woo-hoo, and that you liked it.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, good writing will go a long way. In my book, yeah. And these two episodes were wonderfully written, and you know, like the books flying off and the Jack and computer thing didn't make a whole lot of sense. But other than that, it was well written. It had a sense of mystery. It kind of had a sense of dread. I felt emotions other than annoyance, which is fantastic. So I mean, yeah, that's great. I mean, I wish Star Trek Picard gave me other feels other than annoyance, but hopefully in season two, got my fingers and eyes crossed.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Eyes crossed.
You might not be able to see very well.
It might look better with my eyes crossed. Those Federation ships are copy pasted.
Maybe they'll look like different now. Well, guys, stay tuned. Next episode, we will have Star Trek, more to come, and we can't wait. And we can't wait to do more content, hopefully in the future for you. But until then, hang on, be safe,
wash
your hands, be healthy, and live long and prosper, one and all.
Drinking friend I ever had.
Woohoo! Who turned out the lights?
Hey, who turned out the lights?
Michael Caine turned out the lights.
Is that Michael Caine?
Some people just want to see the world burn. Other people turn off the lights. I turn off the lights.
There was only one part about the episode that I did not like.
What's that?
It was when the way she says ice cream.
Ice cream.
Well, it sounded like queem.
Queem.
Like, no R, like, replace the R with a W. Ice
cream. Like, people say library instead of library.
Ice cream.
Oh, yeah. I hate when people say library. Oh, it drives me nuts.
Well, you know, if they say Aaron, you always say escape.
What's that?
Did you know you always say escape?
Escape?
You say escape. Instead of escape. Like, escape. You say escape.
Did you say escape?
Yeah.
I would escape, like, especially.
Especially. Are they spelled similarly?
Yes.
Well, they're the ES. Escape. I probably slur my S on there, so it's escape.
Escape and...
Escape. Yeah, you're right. It's escape. 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 Yeah. You're right. I've been told I throw T's at the end of words.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Actually, in Europe, they put R's on the ends of words that end in A, and then they drop the R's on words that end in R. So
I'm honestly...
You mean like people in Boston?
Kind of like people in Boston. Yeah.
I'm convinced that the English language is nothing but a farce, because the way things are written and the way they're pronounced sometimes do not make sense.
Yeah.
The way we say them, and I know some things have been bastardized. Like, I always throw out the word individual, because we put an individual. There's no "j" in there. It's indivisible or
individual.
It's like we don't say it. I mean, that's not how people talk. It's weird.
Yeah.
You know, and there's tons of examples.
Like, we also have weird silent letters that make no sense. And we have like 16 different theirs and those. And
it's so weird.
Like, there's so many words are so close together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird.
If only we had languages and the flaps of butterfly wings.
Americans don't say aluminium.
Yeah, they don't.
Oh, it's such a badass way of saying aluminum.
Right.
Aluminium and makes it sound like aluminium. Super fancy.
And you know someone's British when you hear that right away.
Yeah. Well, like, all the Apple talks, they got Jonathan Ive talking about how the new MacBook Pro is machined out of a single piece of aluminium. It makes it sound so much more advanced than like a tin can. Aluminium can.
I know, right?
Aluminium.
But, like, I don't know. I think there's a sense of, like, there's a certain amount of ignorance when it comes to the English language. And I think that we, in America, we're content with second-rate pronunciation.
Mm.
And we don't care.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure the Welsh have the least pronunciation.
Maybe.
Did you ever watch Misfits? Either of you?
Misfits.
It sounds familiar. I might have.
It's basically the British version of Heroes, where like these teenagers get these powers that make them like kind of like superheroes. But this one girl, she's Welsh. She doesn't so much speak English as she does like chew up and spit it out. She is incomprehensible sometimes. I have to like turn on the subtitles when she talks, because, I mean, like, we speak English good compared to the Welsh, because that
we speak English good.
We speak English way goodlier than the Welsh. Accent is so thick, and it's just like, was that? I mean, is that still English? I was like, I had to rewind scenes where she spoke so many times because it just was so incomprehensible. Misfits is a good show, by the way. I recommend it. I mean, like, they did like my biggest problem with that show is that like actors just left because they got better gigs somewhere else, so they just like got written out like with little to no explanation. Also, Ramsay from Game of Thrones, the guy that cut off the dude's dick and like the hog of a sausage, that Ramsay is a good guy in this. It's so hard to watch him as a good guy after seeing him in Game of Thrones.
It's hilarious.
It's so weird, but yeah, it's worth a watch if you can find it somewhere. I really enjoyed it.
Huh. I'll have to look it up. I'm trying to think of what else I've been watching. I've been watching the HBO, what is it called? Oh, God. I can't remember right now. It's so weird. My brain is not working. I'm watching something on HBO. It'll come up to me in a second.
I've been watching Merlin.
Oh, is that the older series? Is the same?
Yeah, the older. It's just I watched like probably the first four episodes like years ago and never picked it back up.
Oh.
And I've been meaning to watch it, and Michael won't watch it. So since he's
gone,
doing other stuff. I am watching it finally.
I'm watching The Outsider. That's what it is.
The Outsider. You know what I couldn't watch?
What's that?
Sorry, go ahead, Dave.
Oh, I started Ozark season 3 like a week ago, and I'm already done with it. It was so good. It was just.
I know everyone says Ozark's good. I started watching
such a good show.
I started watching the first, and then I kind of fell off, and I didn't like it, just I didn't get the chance to finish it.
Jason Bateman's like directing episodes, producing the show, and acting in it, and he's just, I mean, it just, he's phenomenal. And
he's great. He's a great actor.
He won an Emmy for directing too for that show. So I mean, like, the show's really good. And like, it's like a roller coaster. It's well written. I care about the characters, and it's just like, what? It's so good. It's like it's basically like the new Breaking Bad. That's kind of how, but it's more from the money perspective than the drug perspective.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the genre it is.
Well, it's all about laundering money.
Yeah. But instead of like, you know, it's that perspective instead of like being the drug maker, manufacturer like Breaking Bad was. It's a similar show, just from that perspective. So it's fantastic.
It's awesome. Yeah, I'll have to watch it. I just, you know, find a time. And also it's hard with the kids because I don't want to be like watching stuff like that in front of them.
Yeah, it's very, very R-rated.
Yeah,
no, it's like Breaking Bad if it was on HBO.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's hard. It's hard for that stuff.
Yeah.
With children.
I started the Umbrella Academy.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I liked the Umbrella Academy.
I'm only on episode 3. Like the episode's been kind of boring, but like at the end there's always a cliffhanger. It's like it feels like True Blood, where it's like I was kind of like, eh, the episode was okay, but they always ended a cliffhanger where I kind of wanted to keep watching even though the rest of the episode wasn't great.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it gets better, cuz I mean it's an interesting premise. I'm just waiting for the bickering to stop and like stuff to start moving, cuz like they set up like a really tight timetable for stuff to happen, and it's like, come on, let's get there. What's going on? It's like it's got to happen over the course of a week basically, and it's like, come on.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like the comic book too. I read the comic book when it came out, and I really liked it too. So, and I think they did real good at making the comic and the story into a comic, but make it palatable for people to watch. It's written by the guy for the singer from My Chemical Romance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, I mean, like, I remember you saying it was, hearing you say it was good, Aaron, so that's why I wanted to give it a watch, so.
You should definitely watch Lock and Key when you have a chance to.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Nice. I'm going to watch that.
Yeah, it's good.
Just haven't yet.
Yeah, I know, it's like when you can get time for all that shit.
Yeah. I wanted to like The Boys, and I just...
You didn't like it?
I didn't, you know, You know how I am. I'm all about, you know, justice, and because it's so corrupt, I'm just like pissed off the entire time I watch the show.
There's definitely some skeevy stuff going on in that too. So.
Yeah, I haven't watched that yet either.
It's good. It's good. It's just she's right. It's there's some very aggravating things when it comes to stuff like that, you know, because it's all corruption.
Yeah.
I really want to watch The Expanse. I just,